It is time for the Media Beat with David Tarachuk. David joins us on a Friday. We rebroadcast it also on Monday during our noontime hour, and you can hear David on the weekend as well here. But forget about all that. You can also get David's column, The Media Beat, at themediabeat.us. Also, sometimes he posts on Huffington Post, and he's also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. We're out of time, David. Nice speaking to you today.
Well, there's so much to say about how busy I am, I know. But I'm taking time to talk to you. I'm very happy to do that. Happy March, by the way. First of March from the media capital of the world, New York City. Coated in white this morning. Very beautiful.
And we are coated in white, too, and there's more white on the way. But they always say that February goes out, out like a lamb and marches in like a lion, or something like that.
Well, yes, February was April is the cruelest month, is a line from T.S. Eliot. But I think February was pretty damn cruel in many ways.
It's just winter. This winter has been strange, and it's been a difficult one because it's been one day it's 45 degrees, the next day it's 10 below. I mean, and then you get snow one day and you get sleet one day, and it's been miserable. But then again, it matches what's going on in Washington.
Well, that's what I was about to say. The erratic meteorological conditions of February were certainly nothing compared with the erratic goings on in the nation's capital. I'm due there next week, by the way. I'll give you a situation report from on site. But for the meantime, just watching it like a media consumer and observer that I am, it's hard to know where to start this week with anything to talk about. Do you think there's been anything going on that's worth our attention?
Yeah, I really don't think so. No. Yeah, but you know what's funny about it? It's not funny. What's interesting about this situation is for a man who likes to get on the media and control what the media covers, and he doesn't really care what the media covers. But this week, he set up this meeting in Korea, actually in Vietnam, which I find really amazing that Donald Trump finally goes to Vietnam. the bone spurs
didn't. Well, I'm surprised his bone spurs didn't give him trouble. Right. Just the mere thought of going there.
So this meeting is set up for Vietnam for Donald Trump to meet with Korea, and he tried to make that meeting outpace what was going to go on in Washington, but there was no
Good
way.
Luck with that.
Yeah, there was no way that was going to happen, and his own party really added to the misery by the way they reacted. You know, if we remember what happened in Watergate in the hearings, the Republicans and Democrats fought like hell behind closed doors. They did not do it. You can go back and Google and look at those sessions that Sam Ervin headed up, and he had his little copy of the U.S. Constitution right there with him. But senators were decent to one another, and the congressmen were decent to one another in front of the public. Boy, that is all gone by the wayside, David. That's the most shameful thing I think I saw go on this period so far.
Yes, it was all, in the end, there was absolutely not. Well, there was some diligent questioning that got new material established and new lines of investigation suggested. And that was a useful service to the whole process of truth discovery, which is what oversight is all about. It was the Oversight Committee, after all, oversight of the Executive Department, oversight of the President and all his administration, in other words. But much of the whole Cohen session with the Oversight Committee 2 days ago was absolutely a sort of verbal bloodbath between Trump supporters and Trump denigrators. It was not the most edifying thing you could imagine. Whereas, in some ways, I don't want to push this parallel too much, and other people have, promoted it and others have denigrated it. But do you remember in Watergate the tilting of the of the table in the end happened because of the president's lawyer at that time. I mean, White House counsel, in fact, was his official position, John Dean. He came out as the man who really spilled the beans on Nixon. And in some ways, the president's lawyer this time his personal lawyer and fixer and enforcer, which is what, of course, this president has needed in terms of a personal lawyer. He's the focus of bean spilling this time. And the contrast between the two bean spillers and the way they were treated in evidence giving is really instructive. We are living in a different world. You're absolutely right.
You know, what there were two things that I only watched probably about an hour of the whole proceedings because I shouted things at the TV. And what I shouted at first was, do any of you folks on the Republican side, and this was just on the Republican side because they were trashing the reputation of Cohen. Well, guess what? He has a lousy reputation. We all know that. He was not a good person. What he did was not good things. But did any Republican, and this is where I chide the Democrats, not one Democrat responded to Republicans by saying, do any of you know the RICO law? Do any of you realize that, yes, we take disreputable characters, people with horrible characters that have done horrible things, but if they don't turn and give the names of the other bad people, we would never put the real bad people in jail. That was never pointed out once to the Republicans, that, yes, you can bang on this guy all day long. He's a horrible person to most people, but for whatever reason, he decided to turn. And this time, because he lied so much to everybody in the past, that if he lies this time, his sentence won't be 3 to 5 years. It'll be 15 to 20 to 30 years. I'm surprised the Democrats just didn't respond by saying, look up what the RICO law has done and what it's done.
Yeah, and to make such a fuss about having a proven and admitted liar back to give evidence, a liar to Congress back to give evidence to Congress, which is what the Republicans are banging on the drum about constantly. It was surprising that no on the Democratic side said that, this is not unusual. I think one of the Republicans said that it was unheard of for a congressional chairman like Elijah Cummings to do this, to invite back a liar to give testimony to the Congress, to a congressional committee. Well, Elliot Abrams, a Reagan administration official who was found guilty of lying to Congress, was invited back to give evidence also. and he's now, in fact, the administration's front man on Venezuela. There's not a lot to be made out of saying we don't listen to liars once they've been proven to lie.
But what you
it's simply not true in either government or in law enforcement, as you point out.
You know, I look at this whole situation. I want to get to Brexit in a moment before we get there, but I look at this whole situation. I think that that Mueller has done an amazing job here. He has set up the Ninth Circuit Court in New York as the place that's really going to do the damage. And everything you mentioned earlier, all the leads that came out of these meetings with Cohen are going to the Ninth Circuit because these are crimes that cannot be pardoned away. And
sure.
The thing that I think the Trump administration really has to worry about is no longer the special counsel. I think they really have to worry about the Ninth Circuit, because the Ninth Circuit is just getting all this information, because all this illegal activity, if it happened in New York.
Yeah, and here in New York also, you have the other way to head off a potential pardon. A presidential pardon agreed ahead of time. If someone's going to get convicted, but then only pardoned by the president, then you've got to think of a way around that. And the simple way that is available to us here with New York State charges against him. A federal presidential pardon is no use to anybody convicted of a state crime, and that's what's on the cards now, and it's certainly being worked out as a tactic here.
And, you know, I have to say, a stroke of genius goes to Donald Trump for opening up conversations once again with North Korea. People think that our government has not been talking with North Korea. They have in the past, but they've always collapsed and crashed. So I give kudos for Trump for opening up this avenue. But once again, this meeting was not really set up. North Korea came in with a plan. The United States didn't, and so once...
Oh, that's right. The United States came up with a visit.
Yeah.
that was the extent of the plan, just about, yeah. Except that, you know, they also, interestingly, had an agreement lined up and ready for signature, according to Mr. Trump himself, and because they didn't get what they wanted to, you know, particularly in, right up towards the point where they could have signed that, they weren't getting what they wanted and decided to pull up sticks and withdraw. But it doesn't speak to a great deal of strategic thinking ahead of time.
No, and you know, it's really bad when your State Department releases a press release about what happened in North Korea, then 5 hours later releases their idea of what happened. And you know, this is amazing. You have to question who's telling the truth, Korea or the United States. That's you know, the bad thing about this whole thing is that this leader in North Korea is now an accepted leader across the world. He's been given the world stage on a plate by the United States of America.
Sure, and it's not unusual for two sides to disagree about how talk broke down. There's nothing particularly distressing about that, I don't think. But it does speak to the fact that it is just on the one hand and on the other with one of the most vile regimes in the world. You're right that this whole process has elevated Kim out of complete burda into a position of recognition throughout the world as a man who talks to the civilized world in the figure of Donald J. Trump on equal terms. That's a very interesting development.
And then our president, when questioned, says, "Oh, I believe the man. I don't think he was involved. He didn't know about what happened to the American citizen."
Well, Trump's not the first to do that. You remember when George W. Bush looked into the eyes of President Putin of Russia and said that he could really see into his soul and he could deal with him. It's part of the folly of grandeur that can attack people in the White House, I'm afraid. You sometimes get to think that you're all powerful because you're being called the most powerful man in the world all the time. We're stuck with a man who trusts his gut in the same way that George W. Bush trusted his gut. But of course, he's got the extra degree of fantabulism as well. Trump has. He'll just make up who he wants to believe and who he doesn't. But he's decided he wants to believe strong men, and he's being taken in by strong, you know, these people who affect to be strong men on the world scene.
All right. Now, let's talk a little bit about Brexit or the non-Brexit or what Brexit.
Hard Brexit, soft Brexit, deal Brexit.
It
comes in various flavors.
Where does it really stand? I mean...
Ask any Brit in Britain right now and they say, what the... They answer the question with a question. What the hell is going on is usually the question. No one quite knows, and it's a bit of a weaselish get out on my part, but it's true. People don't know. This is totally uncharted territory to the point where Britain is floating off into the North Sea, off the coast of Europe, and not only uncharted, we don't have any pilots, we don't have any, not only no charts, we have no. Sense at all of how business is going to be conducted from here on. Just in practical terms, with no arrangements made, which is quite, you know, one very likely development now, although, you know, the ground is shifting and it shifts with some development or other almost every day. But as of now, there is no deal in place. There's no evidence that a comprehensive deal is possible, is capable of being produced before the deadline of March 29th. And of course, it's possible that we can extend that deadline. But if we end up with the deadline appearing and being achieved and no deal being achieved, no set of arrangements that are put in place, then it could be, yes, economic chaos, practical chaos in some very visible ways. Imagine all the trucks lined up with goods to go one way or the other across the English Channel to Europe or from Europe, with suddenly customs inspections required because the customs union is something that we don't any longer have with Europe. That's part of the deal. You don't customs free borders has been for the last 40 years.
Can you imagine?
And suddenly it's not, and there are no arrangements for coping with that.
Just imagine it. Take a look at the U.S. Mexican border and the backups there that are normally. I can imagine what it would look like. It is almost become an impossible situation. But you know, I'll just my final comments on it. It's amazing to look at the United States government, not just Donald Trump. The whole government seems to be adrift. And you look in England, and it looks like not just Theresa May, but once again, their whole government is adrift.
Then you go over to France. And then you can hit up against structured. By this, I mean more autocratic. You can work yourself right across the globe. And
you come to Russia, where all of a sudden
you got autocrats, and then you keep going. You've got China; that's an autocracy, flat. Yeah,
but all I'm saying is, China seems to be operating on many more cylinders than everybody else.
Well, and then what? This is. I was listening to you as I. Skidooed in.
And David, she was probably hitting her head on the
desk. Welcome, Jill. It's good to have you join us.
she was probably hitting her head on the windshield when I was talking.
We may shout at the TV. Jill can shout at the radio at us.
That's right. And I think, well, okay, this is all well and good, but...
it needs the firm touch of Jill.
It needs the Goodman touch.
But it needs a little bit of, what I wanted to ask both of you is, so how do you think this is playing in Peoria?
I don't think it's playing in Peoria at all, to be honest with you. I think most people in the tuning out.
There's a severe danger. I think we see it happening already. Yeah.
I think the people that dislike Donald Trump are watching. I think the people that believe in Donald Trump are not watching, and that leaves 40% of America that's not watching and doesn't really care what's going on.
As the president gets more and more beleaguered, however, I suggest this on the basis of some reporting of my own, and I'm watching very carefully what's going on in the ranks of the Republican Party. Preparations are being made for the possibility of a primary challenge to the president. A weakened autocrat is always an invitation to a possible revolt from within. And I'm not predicting anything here, but it's very interesting that a whole new lease of life has been given to Republican organizations like Defending Democracy Together, which is an interesting little label for people who are working from within. And we may have a primary challenge. Certainly the Maryland governor is taking it very, very seriously, and a lot of the big Republican funders are taking it very seriously too.
It's interesting, and Jill, you can comment on this. I do not see right now someone strong enough to come up and in a primary defeat Donald Trump, because I don't think they're strong enough to stand up to him. I think Mitt Romney would stand a decent chance, but he, once again, is not strong enough. That's, you know, one thing you got to credit this guy with, and Jill knows I do not like Donald Trump. I don't like what his past. I don't like what he's done with his company. I don't like what he's done with the White House. But give this man his due. He knows how to wield that single power, and as long as the Congress of the United States and the Senate goes along with it, and he has them under the thumb, as long as they have to right now, there's no one that's going to be able to topple him unless in the general election, is my opinion. I mean, something really bad has to come out of the Ninth Circuit to shake anybody. Something really, really bad.
And now this is the real reason I was banging my head on the steering wheel. Southern District.
Okay, well,
because Ninth Circuit is California.
You're right. So the Southern District in New York. But something really bad has to come out of there. Kind of like Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon was not going to be impeached until the Friday Night Massacre. That changed everything. And I can remember it plain as day. But
he wasn't impeached, but he had a visit
that's right.
A group of Republican grandees
and he was
senior people led by that real sort of pillar of
but I want to throw this in too
of constitutional responsibility, Barry Goldwater.
Yeah.
But they said to him, you know, look at the real truth of the field now, Mr. President. It's time for you to go.
And that's
possible with this president too. It's the Republicans who are scared of him losing the general. Will be the real motive force in any possible change.
I think that's what, and Jill, thank you for pointing out about the Southern District. I think that's, if something really bad comes out of the Southern District, the congressional leaders and the Senate leaders in the Republican Party will go to the president and say, listen, if this continues on to the election, we're really going to get swamped.
That right now, and this is why I'm saying, hey, is this playing in Peoria? That was actually my question to the two of you, because if you go in and you look through this particular lens, it's one thing. One of the, in my view, media responsibilities that is ain't happening, excuse me. I apologize to anyone I'm offending by that statement, is that... You cannot get an intelligent representation of what's going on pretty much without going to wherever it is yourself, and that's pretty inconvenient at this juncture.
Oh, you mean nobody's going out and doing reporting?
Well, people are going out and doing reporting.
Where things matter, which is polling station, of course, is where they ultimately matter. We had a small vote here in New York City for what's called the public advocate, a position which is quite important. And it's so interesting that it's the microcosmic example that any particular vote can offer you was on display here. A lot of people didn't even know the vote was taking place. Local beat reporting, my point is that beat reporting on this issue could have focused on all the local issues that have been so important here in New York City. Most of all, one that broke through to national attention in recent weeks was the coming of Amazon's so-called second headquarters. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago ourselves, that there was so little beat reporting going on there. People were totally unprepared for what finally happened. They had no sense of how public reaction was developing to the possibility of Amazon coming to part of New York. And then when the whole deal collapsed, everyone was taken completely by surprise. And yes, reporting means going out of the office And that's what's lacking so much of the time now. And what the political climate of this country is at any given moment now is assessed by reporters sitting in the newsroom, looking at the web and following people's tweets. That's not reporting, of course.
No,
Jill, I know you've gone on about this many times before, but I want to join the critique now.
And I can't, 1 minute, that's not nearly enough to just say that when Marshall was watching the Jimmy Breslin thing, who was it?
Pete Hamill and Jimmy Breslin. We need a couple of those guys, or we need a couple of young guys.
Younger versions of them that are now on TV. Who are prepared to wear out their shoe leather.
But then their editors have to, it is so depressing to watch everybody sitting online getting their information. It just makes me... homicidal, basically. I'm a danger. I am a danger. Anyway, as ever, because we've run out of time, which is really too bad, I'll have to get you on this one next week. Thank you very much, David Tereshchuk, The Media Beat.
Thank you.